Hey guys, today we're going to talk about developing an investing plan, because if you don't have an investing plan, nothing we talked about means shit. You got to have an investing plan. Hey everyone, welcome to the Make More Podcast. I'm Matt Heslin, I'm your host. I'm here today with my daughter Brittany. We're going to talk today about developing an investing plan for your future. So Brittany and I have talked a lot about it over the years, and you know, she is one of the smartest people I know. Went to Michigan State, has a great degree in finance. Britt, what did you learn about financing at Michigan State?
Wow, thanks for the intro. That was so nice. That's a nice compliment, Dad. Thanks.
Well, it's true.
Well, in my 4 years at Michigan State, obviously, I was in Broad, the best business college in the entire world. I studied finance for about 4 years before switching to marketing, like full transparency. But Michigan State has a phenomenal finance program.
Right.
But in my time there, I think I just learned really generic principles of understanding finance, anything like you would learn in, I don't know, like what the classes are called now, like Finance 101 or 501, something like that.
So you learn textbook stuff.
Yeah, just a lot of like textbook stuff. I think anything that would set you up for basic principles if you were entering into like maybe a beginning like financial analyst position. Okay. Nothing that I think would really set me up for really, really investing like the way that you do. I've learned, so let's say I would sit in like a lecture hall of like 500 people, 600 people, and you're learning finance based on statistics, based on calculus. You have all these equations that you're learning, and being realistically one of the only women in the class, in a class that was just all guys, like that's kind of intimidating on its own.
So is it true? I mean, do you feel like what you learned was how to calculate certain returns, but it didn't teach you how to invest? It didn't teach you how to make money?
No,
it taught you. It just basically taught you how to calculate a formula.
Well, yeah, and if you have a financial calculator, like that can do that for you if you have the correct information. But more of my point is, like, I had a harder time sitting in classes understanding finance, and then when I would go home and we would sit and talk about it, the concept would click like just fine.
Well, and that's what we're going to talk today with our guests about.
Yeah,
is, you know, how to develop an investing plan. And I think, Britt, one of the things you would agree with me on is it really depends on what stage of life you're at, right?
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah. I mean, because if you're 30 years old, you're willing to take a lot more risk to grow your portfolio than if you're 65 and you're getting set to retire, you need to protect your assets.
Whereas right now, like for you specifically, I've known, like we've gone over this multiple times, you're not in like a major growth phase.
Right.
So that's not your objective when going over your portfolio and looking over stock performance and whatever else, like where you just have everything kind of allocated. Where for me, because I'm in my mid-20s, I'm 25 for reference, I'm willing to take more risk to build that portfolio.
Yeah, you're willing to go up the risk curve. So it leads me to the point where, you know, if you're, by the way, you use this term Gen Zennial all the time. What the fuck is a Gen Zennial? I have no idea. I know what a Gen Z is. And I know what a millennial is, but I don't know what a Gen Zennial is. What is that?
So, obviously, I was born in the late 90s. I was born in the late 90s. You know, my sister was born like 2000. Like, she was, you know, like when I think of Gen Z, like I realistically think of my youngest brother, who's almost 10 years younger than I am. I don't know how you and Mom did that, by the way.
That was a total oops.
But I was born in the late 90s, but I grew up in the early 2000s. So I think a lot of people my age can relate to the idea. I'll just quickly like explain the Gen Zennial context concept. Sorry.
I'm still dying to understand this.
But, you know, I think a lot of us grew up kind of relating to the ideas before technology, just being outside growing up. Like, yeah, we had a lot of the same experiences as like millennials, but we grew up on the cusp of technology, like with the first iPhone before there were iPad kits. Like, I grew up outside, you know, going to the park with you on the weekends, throwing a baseball, throwing footballs, playing soccer, before technology really, I think, integrated itself with you know, kids nowadays, which is, it's been a plus and, you know, a drawback in some instances. So long story short, I'm a Gen Zennial because I identify as both or somewhere in the middle.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. Well, you know, by the way, if anybody out there wants to challenge her to a duel, she throws a baseball harder than anybody I've ever met. And she throws a football a good 40, 50 yards with a perfect spiral. She's a left-hander, by the way.
Wow.
She's multi-talented.
You're really gassing me up today. That's so nice.
I'm just telling the truth.
Proud right? dad.
But yeah, proud dad. But let's talk about investing. So if you're 20 years old, or 25 and you're a Gen Zennial, I mean, you're going to want to go out on the growth curve and take a little bit more risk, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk about what that means for the average investor. We talked about in previous podcasts, the 10-10-80 rule, right?
Yeah.
And you, I brought you up on that notion of saving 10%, you know, giving 10% away for the universe and living on 80%. But once you have the money accumulated where you're willing to make an investment, you have to know where to invest and how to invest.
Yeah.
And we know that there's a lot of different platforms out there. You've got Charles Schwab, you got E-Trade, you got Merrill Lynch, you got the big brokerage houses. You know, I think for the, I want to address more of the millennial and the Gen Zers today.
Okay.
And I think really it's important that you guys understand that once you have a substantial sum of money, a couple thousand dollars saved, and you put it with as a brokerage investment firm, it's imperative to understand who you're putting it with. You know, Charles Schwab as an example. I even use a Charles Schwab account.
I have Charles Schwab too.
Yeah. I mean, there's basically no fees.
No.
And for every fee that the brokerage house charges you as an investor, that's just lowering your return on investment. So the first thing we got to understand is you got to set up a brokerage account. And that's really done best done by doing it through a self-directed program like Charles Schwab or E-Trade. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, especially for millennials, when you're starting out, like, you're not going to have a lot of money. And maybe your first goal is moving out of your parents' house into an apartment. I would say that's typically like the first thing that you're thinking of doing out of college. And then immediately after, you know, you have a steady source of income, you've moved out. People nowadays, at least my age, like if you're a guy, I know a lot of my guy friends are kind of on that route, starting up like a 401k or like a Roth or something like that.
Right.
But I think the first step is setting up an account where you're just dumping that 10% into, and you can start using that to invest.
Yeah.
Slowly.
Yeah. And I think what becomes really important to understand is picking the right investment advisor. Because if you go to Schwab or E-Trade, you can get an investment advisor at no cost, and they'll help you direct your money into the appropriate investments. It's important that you have a strong rapport, wouldn't you say, with your investment advisor, that you guys see the universe the same way, and that he or she understands your goals.
Yeah.
Your investment plan has to include an investment advisor, because practically speaking, you don't have the skills quite yet to go out and start making purchases of individual companies. So we need an investment advisor. And my advice to you is to go to Schwab or E-Trade and get started with an investment advisor. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's like the easiest way to go about it.
Yeah.
And I think you kind of hit the key point right there, is really building rapport and building that trust with someone who's obviously not just looking to make a commission off of
your trade.
Yeah, off of your trade. Well, like, yes. And, you know, they're going to regardless, but you really want someone that wants to stay with you long-term, create that long-term relationship, because then as you accumulate more wealth, they're going to make more off of that, but they right. have a relationship where you're going to trust them and say like, hey, there's like, say there's, for instance, like lithium's taking off. I really think that you should invest in this company. I know it seems a little, not like your niche, but like, trust me here. Like, I think this is like right. going to bode well for you, because whatever bodes well for you, he's also going to be making money off of that. So right. you want someone that's thinking long-term relationship, that you can build that trust with, and that's really going to say like, hey, let me just kind of like broaden your interest here. And, you know, it's going to make you, I think also as a millennial, Gen Zennial, Gen Zer, be more aware of like what's going on in the world. It makes you focus on like, hey, like, why is lithium? Like, what's the deal with that? Like, why gas? And as a millennial, it just kind of takes your focus off of like, or Gen Zennial, whatever. Your focus off of, you know, just social media. It's like, where's the world moving? Like, why is this important? So it allows you to really direct your focus into really putting your money where your mouth is.
Well, I also think in your, tell me if this is true.
Sure.
But in your generations, as Gen Zennials, sustainability of the planet.
Oh, yeah.
Energy, green energy are all things that you're...
Deeply matter.
They deeply matter. And so, you know, you can go to your Schwab investment advisor and say, hey, look, I've got, you know, $5,000 that I've saved up. I want to invest in sustainable, renewable energy. Give me a list of companies. And then we're going to talk in future podcasts about how to evaluate the value of those companies. I'm going to give you some simple rules of thumb that will, which you know, because we've talked about it at length, PE ratios and the like.
Yeah.
Teach you how to look at those companies for yourself so you can argue for or against a certain position in a company that your investment advisors are guiding you toward. Because sometimes, you know, they make mistakes and you really got to do your research and understand what is and is not a good investment.
So you would say the first step in developing, like, I think a strong investment plan is first and foremost establishing like an account through Charles Schwab or E-Trade,
yeah.
And then finding someone trustworthy to kind of help establish, you know, strong investments.
Yeah, go down to your local Schwab office. You know, there's one 2 miles from here. There's one 5 miles from our house.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place. So you just look up Schwab online. Find the nearest Schwab office, go down, tell you want to meet with an investment advisor. They'll hook you up, and you may or may not, that first person may or may not be the one that you want to do business with. That person's got to connect with you on your level.
Yeah, so those are obviously the two things to really, I think, before you start an investment plan.
Right.
So how do you start an investment plan? What would you tell me? A Gen Zennial.
A Gen Zennial? I'd say you're fucked. just kidding. I think to start an investment plan, we've laid the foundation here. Go get Schwab or E-Trade, open a brokerage account, and start making some investigations about what you do and do not think are going to be long-term successes.
Okay. What would you say is a long-term success?
So an investment that goes 5-10 years and produces dividends, which are interest payments to you as the holder of that stock. A good investment for me is something that pays me a dividend every year. So let's say oil stocks. I know that oil is taboo, but for lack of a better example, the oil stocks pay big dividends because they make a lot of money. So you can invest and maybe you pay, you know, $80 a share for the first 5 shares that you buy. And then you earn $1 a share interest per year. So you're getting, you know, a return on your investment and growth in the stock price. So I would say, you know, hook up with an investment advisor, you know, start thinking about what's important to you in your investment plan. What kind of companies you think are going to be successful down the line. And then we'll talk about the research and due diligence that's necessary.
So after you get together with that person, you're creating more long-term choices. What would you say comes after developing more long-term choices? Would you suggest anything to a Gen Zennial? Would you suggest like short-term riskier investments as well? Or would you say start with things that are more long-term? And once you kind of like have an understanding, would you then move to short-term?
I think it really depends. I mean, if you're looking for total return, I'd look for growth stocks. But right now, growth stocks are not in vogue. So growth stocks, the market's at an all-time high right now. I mean, so everything's in vogue. But the reality is that you need to learn to understand what the companies are worth, and that will tell you whether you should be in the long-term or short-term. Let me give you an example. In the 1990s, Napster, remember Napster? Probably not.
I think I'm a little too young for that. Okay.
Well, NASA came out and they had a very high run up in price and then just dropped off the market and died. And there were a lot of companies in the 90s during the tech boom that, you know, had no earnings at all as a company, but their stock prices just kept going up. And I had a model. I made a financial model, which every night it would evaluate 100 stocks. And my algorithm would tell me whether to buy, sell, or hold. And for 5 years, everything said, don't buy, don't buy, don't buy. And everybody kept telling me, I'm missing the new economy.
But you did the opposite.
But I did the opposite. I did. I followed my model. I earned 12% a year. And everybody else lost their ass.
So how did you develop that model? Like, what made you decide to go against the grain? Because I think that's how I live, I think, my life financially. And that's something that you've taught me from a very young age, that I think people naturally want to go with the grain.
Yes.
They want to go with the crowd. But
great
you've
point.
Taught me since I was very young.
Great point, Brittany.
To not follow the crowd. And it's always boded well in my favor because through osmosis, I've learned that and understood that from quite a young age.
So my belief is 90% of the people are wrong 90% of the time. So why would you follow the crowd? Be what's called a contrarian. Go the other way. If everybody else is heading north, head south. If everybody else is buying, you start selling. If everybody else is selling, you start buying. It takes guts. It takes courage. We'll get into that later too, but that's a great point.
Yeah, and I think I'll just kind of make a note here that concept I've not only applied in my financial life, but quite literally anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't want to just say you know, lightly, like politically or religiously, or, you know, even making small like decisions with my friends, like handling arguments that somebody else might. I think behaviorally is more of what I would say. But I think that is something that could apply to many areas in your life. And it's only, again, it's done well for me.
Well, let's wrap this one up. I think we've given them a lot to think about, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, but I think if we just kind of like look at everything that you said, so you open an account with whoever you choose, you find a trusted advisor, you start with long-term investment options, and then realistically, don't do what everyone else is doing in terms of developing an investment plan, developing a portfolio. Do what works for you, for your lifestyle, the kind of salary that you're making, and then based on your like 5x7 card, what your goals are. I think that's really important to factor in.
Yeah.
When you're developing a portfolio, it has to reflect your lifestyle and how you want to live at the end of the day.
Yeah, and your values, right?
Yeah, realistically your values. And I think that's the grounding point. Like, you're not going to go and invest in something polar to what you don't believe in.
Jeffrey Epstein's funds. Yeah, we wouldn't invest in Jeffrey Epstein. So that's about the first part of what we want to talk about in terms of developing an investment plan. We look forward to seeing you on the next podcast. And Britt, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.